Here's the pitch, hammered deep to left center field, on a line at the wall, watch it, it's gone, and number 20. The Toronto Blue Jays trying to make some noise here late in the ball game. It's now a 5-2 Kansas City lead.
There's your play of the game, brought to you by Rogers On Demand. Watch the Jays live from anywhere, online or on the go, at rogersondemand.com. Jay Pierre and Sevilla with a two-run homer. And
it helps when you're doing reads to have your microphone on. That is the play of the game, brought to you by Rogers On Demand. Watch the Jays live from anywhere, online or on the go, at rogersondemand.com. That was Jay Pierre and Sevilla's two-run homer in the bottom of the seventh, his 20th of the season, and it ties him for the Blue Jays' all-time single-season record for home runs by a catcher. With 20, John Buck setting that record last year, breaking Darren Fletcher's mark of 19. So JP, with 32 games to go, is tied for the all-time Jays record for home runs by a catcher. Not by a rookie, by any catcher. And he's only, what, four off of Eric Hinsky's all-time record for home runs by a Blue Jay rookie? I think Hinsky hit 24 in his Rookie of the Year season. Checking that right now. 24. So he's four off the Blue Jays' all-time rookie mark. Congratulations to Jay Pierre and Sevilla. He had three RBIs tonight. The Blue Jays, though, lose it 9-6 to the Kansas City Royals. I'm Mike Wilner, and this is the Jays Talk. We will be taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. We'll let you know that John Farrell did miss the last bit of the game. As we're told from Shai Davidi, he experienced muscular pain on the left side and is being taken for a precautionary exam. So let's hope everything's okay and it is just some sort of a chest muscle issue with John Farrell. We will keep you posted on anything else that we find out about Farrell, but that's certainly a scary thing. And one hopes everything is going to be just fine. Again, we will take your calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Before we get to your calls, though, I wanted to spend a little bit of time with someone who is widely loved by everyone who's ever listened to the Jays Talk, and you call all the time and talk about him. Tom Henke joins us now. And Tom, I know you've been pushed and pulled and dragged in all kinds of different directions the last day or so, in a very tough time, and I really do appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I wish we could be talking about happier things, but Mike Flanagan passed away last night, and we all know that he was a very good friend of yours, great Oriole, a terrific Blue Jay in a very short tenure here in Toronto. And I just wanted to bring you on so you could kind of share with the people who Mike Flanagan was, some insights into the man that you knew. I only met him a couple of times, and I came away with a smile on my face after every conversation I had with him.
Well, Mike was one of those guys that made it really enjoyable to play the game. He was always there. He was the first guy to pat you on the back if you had a bad game. But he was also there to help, you know, in any way he could. He was that guy that he had such a great sense of humor. He was just a pleasure to play with. Him and I used to do a lot of fishing together, and we stayed with each other at the end of the season a number of times, and he was just a great friend, and it certainly is a sad day to hear that he's gone.
It really is, and just a little insight into his sense of humor. I read a story today that after he gave up the fifth deck home run to Jose Canseco in the American League Championship Series in '89, you were one of the guys he sought out with a little bit of a one-liner after that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he said, well, I must not be that old. I could still throw the ball a long way. So, you know, Mike was one that had a quick sense of humor, a quick wit about him. I mean, he had more one-liners than I can even remember. It was just, like I said, it was a pleasure to get to play with him. He had so much knowledge about the game. You know, I could watch him pitch. He was one of those guys that I considered a pure pitcher. He just didn't blow guys away. He'd come out, and he knew how to set guys up. And it was just a pleasure to be able to just to watch him pitch. And I learned a lot about pitching watching him the few years that he was in Toronto.
How did he fit in? I mean, it seems like he had that gregarious personality that would have fit in anywhere. But here's a guy who comes over in 87, who'd won the Cy Young Award 8 years earlier, been to a couple of World Series. This was a real big-time vet coming into a pretty young clubhouse.
Oh, no question. He fit in perfect. I mean, he was the kind of guy that could bring a lot of bring guys together just by being Mike and the wit that he had in the dugout, in the clubhouse. You know, he could make a tough day seem like it wasn't so tough anymore. And you know, it was, like I said, he was one of those guys that a lot of guys looked up to. He won the Cy Young Award. He won a couple World Series with the Orioles. I mean, he was one of those guys that had been through all the wars, and people looked up to him.
Well, with Tom Hanke here discussing Mike Flanagan, who passed away last night, and Tom, we obviously can't get too deep into the circumstances of his passing, but the fact that you said he was a guy who could make the tough time seem a lot less tough, that kind of jumps out, because very obviously for his own self, he wasn't able to do that at the end.
Well, you know, and I haven't talked to Mike for a number of years. I seen him in at one of the reunions, and we caught up. But you know, it's hard to say what went through his life later on after he got out of ball, and it's just one of those things you can't explain. My prayers go out to his family, and hopefully they'll get some answers, or there probably isn't any answers. But Mike was a great guy. That's the way I'll always remember him, like I said, my prayers go out to his family and the people that he were associated with.
As do all of ours. Tom, thank you so much. We really do appreciate your time tonight.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the Terminator, Tom Hanke, great friend of Mike Flanagan's, who sadly took his own life last night. I know people out online are speculating about, you know, ridiculous things like the fact that the Orioles are terrible and that part of that was on him because he was their GM for a while. That's just, I mean, that's going a little too far. Like I said, with Roger LeJoie on our flagship station, the Fan Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 this afternoon, the only person who knows what's going on inside anybody's head is that person. Unfortunately, for Mike Flanagan, he was not in a good place. Hopefully he's found some peace. It's not the best way to move to phone calls, but in the absence of any sort of segue, the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Again, we will not have John Farrell. He is not with the team right now. He's being examined for some pain in the left side that he experienced during the game. Again, we hope it is nothing serious, and sure that is what we will find out in the morning, but every precaution has to be taken in those cases. Let's get to the phone. Sam is in Toronto. Sam, you're the leadoff man on what hasn't been a terribly ordinary Jays talk though thus far, but let's see if we can get it back to the ball game.
Okay, well, I guess, Mike, I thought it was great to see Kelly Johnson take a couple of walks in his first game with the team. And I'm wondering, well, what do you think Dwayne Murphy's got? Do you think that where Alex has had his eye on this guy for a long time, do you think they have a plan for how to kind of go about fixing his swing so that his on-base can get up there? I mean, he's still taking walks, but...
Well, right now his on-base in the American League 750, which is pretty awesome. But,
well, yeah.
Like Dwayne Murphy said when Colby Rasmus got here, he says he generally gives guys a few weeks and watches them before he comes to them with tweaks and with ideas and potential changes that they might be able to make. So I think that they probably won't do anything this year. He's only going to be here 5 weeks. It is really amazing that it is that close to the end of the season right now. But I think they'll just hope that the fresh start will help, and watch him and see what he does, and let the 5 weeks happen.
And so do you think that they're hoping to get draft picks out of this? Or
well, no, I think this is an audition. I think it's, you know, they may get a draft pick for him. They may not. It depends whether he's a type A or a type B, and it depends whether or not they offer him arbitration. It depends on how his last 5 weeks go. And you're really not in a dissimilar situation than they were with Aaron Hill. Although the optics of not offering Kelly Johnson arbitration are more pleasant than the optics of not offering Aaron Hill arbitration just because of his tenure with the team. But I really think this is a chance to get a look at a guy as opposed to just relying on reports from your scouts and that sort of thing when you're shopping in free agency in the off season.
Okay. And the other thing, I guess, maybe if this does work out, that's great, but I've actually heard on an American podcast, and on
what
blog,
do they know?
That the Jays might be in the market for Jose Reyes. And do you think that's just a total crock, or is that...
Well, look, the Blue Jays are talking about having money to spend. Alex Anthopoulos likes young athletic players, and Jose Reyes is that. So it's natural for people who aren't close to the situation to say, yeah, that they'll look at Jose Reyes. I wouldn't be comfortable with Jose Reyes. First of all, I don't think he would ever sign here to play second base because he's going to get some big-time, multi-year, big-dollar offers to be a shortstop. And if he was here... Yunel Escobar is a better shortstop than him defensively. Adani Echevarria is a better shortstop than he is defensively. So he'd be a second baseman here. So I think that's strike one. Strike two is he's a piece of glass. And I don't want to give out a huge contract to a guy who may well spend a third of that deal on the disabled list.
Oh, I agree. I just thought, you know, posts online today, too, where people are starting to say the Jays look like a pretty good shot to be a playoff team next year.
Well, let's take it as it comes. It's easy to get excited. This is a team that is two games over 500 right now that really, with everything that's gone on this year, has no business being that good. It's extremely talented, and there are a lot of more good players coming, but let's let it play out. I appreciate the call, Sam. I want to get to a bunch of people, and we don't have a lot of time tonight. Jerry is in Toronto. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Mike. A couple of things. Just another note. Are they adding a playoff team next year?
Not yet. They might. They might not.
Because I've been to the last three games. Actually, I've been attending the last three games. And, I mean, there's a good buzz in the stands. But, I mean, it's kind of fruitless when you got the Yankees and the Bo Sox in your division. It's just a waste of time, basically. Unless they had a playoff team. Like, if they added a playoff team this year, the Jays would be fighting against who for the wild card? Like Tampa Bay?
They would be four and a half. Well, actually, no. Right now, the Jays would have picked up. Oh no, they everybody lost tonight. So the Blue Jays would be five games out of the playoffs right now.
So they'd basically at least be in some sort of a playoff run.
Absolutely.
Which is would add a lot of interest. Anyway, on my other question, what's happened to Lynn? I mean, since the All-Star break, like he's completely fell apart. Any thoughts there?
No, I have no idea.
I mean, he looks at the plate like he's got no idea. Like he looks very.
Well, except for those times when he barrels a ball and does good things, which haven't happened nearly often enough. He's in a slump, and very often slumps can build on themselves, and you can start to be in a hole for a week or two, and then you start to tweak something, or you start to change something, or confidence wanes, or you know you get hit by a pitch on the wrist or something, and it can make things worse. I don't know what's going on with Adam Lind right now, and I'm sure Adam Lind doesn't know what's going on with Adam Lind right now, but we have seen this guy be a very, very, very successful big league hitter, and I think he can get that back.
So you think it's just a slump and not a... I mean, this is...
It's a prolonged slump. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, we got to... You know, if we're going to be any sort of a... Well, if they had a playoff team, say a contender for a playoff position... We need a lot more than what he's brought since the All-Star break out of our first baseman. I mean, that's just been... would he be batting 200 since the All-Star break? Do you have the numbers there?
I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I don't think he's... I think he's well under that since the All-Star break. I'll try to look those up for you, but I want to get to another caller. I appreciate it. again, we're done at the top of the hour, so we're trying to get to a lot of people. Patrick in Toronto. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Mike, I got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
First one was kind of ironic the way you guys started the show, and you cut it off just before the little bite came up. I wanted to ask you something about something Alan Ashby said right after Aaron Sebia's 20th there.
Sure.
He kind of heed and hawed and wondered, pondered aloud, if you'd call the season sort of a positive or negative year in his development. And it kind of got me thinking, and it also got me thinking about the other guy on the hill tonight, Cecil. And, you know, there's a lot of clear wins, clear sort of losses with some of the young players this year, but with those two, to me, it's kind of gray. I was wondering what you thought about that. Second question would be, what do you think the realistic chances are of Hill coming back next year? And on the flip side of that, seeing Kelly Johnson in a Jays uniform.
Well, I've seen so little of Kelly Johnson in a Blue Jays uniform. I thought he was fine today, with the exception of that pop-up down the right field line that really was his. It's the right fielder's ball, but Johnson pulled up on it when it looked like he had the better chance to catch it. I didn't think Jose Bautista was going to get there, and Bautista, in fact, didn't get there and never pulled up. So Johnson had a shot. Other than that, I thought he was solid, looked good at the plate, worked his way back into a couple of counts. So I like that. Aaron Hill's chances of signing next year, I have no idea. I wouldn't say they're overwhelming one way or another. And as far as Aaron Sebi and Cecil, I really liked what I had seen from Cecil since he came back from Las Vegas until tonight. And we found out after he was taken out of the game that he's really sick. He's got strep throat. He's dealing with a fever. Again, I'm fine with Brett Cecil. I have no problem. The lack of velocity.
Step forward or step back?
Neither. A step sideways. A slight step back, maybe, because you expect him to be up here in the major leagues all season. But since he's come back from Vegas, he's been very, very good. The drop in velocity is concerning, but not concerning enough to me. I think he'll be able to recover that at some point. And for Aaron Sebia, I'm thrilled. This is, for me, nothing but positive this year. For a rookie catcher, there's so much to do, and the offense generally comes very, very late in the game. And look at this. He's going to set the Blue Jays' all-time record for home runs by a catcher in a single season. He has a chance to set the rookie record. That is a great first step, and it's only going to get better, I think.
And defensively, giant strides, I see. Well, thanks, Mike. For I agree with you for the most part, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks,
a good night.
Patrick. You too. George is in Vancouver. You're on the Jays Talk.
Mike, I wanted to get your opinion. What's it going to take, realistically, for a Blue Jays fan to actually see the Jays not end up 10 games behind the first place? I mean, what does it take? Is it our farm team? Do we need more key positions, more money and salaries? Or is it just, what's the difference between how the Jays were in 92 and 93 to how we are today in the league?
Time, I think, is a huge thing. The Blue Jays in 92 and 93 were all-star teams, and they had the highest payroll in Major League Baseball, though there was a lot less of a payroll disparity back then than there is now. And, you know, it's not that simple to just compare the teams and say, well, why isn't this team as good as that team? It's because that team was loaded with great pitching, with big hitters, with all-stars, and with a few Hall of Famers in there.
Right.
This team isn't, but it's working towards that. And I think what it's going to take more than anything else is time. Time for Colby Rasmus, time for J.P. Aaron Sebia, for all these kids, for Yunel Escobar, for Brett Laurie, for whoever winds up playing second base, for a Travis Snyder, and he may have gotten some bad injury news today. He sent out a very cryptic tweet that I'll read for you all later on. Time for these young pitchers, and time for the young pitchers who are on their way up. And then once you've got it, then you make a little additions like they did in the early 90s, and you pick up a Jack Morris here and a Paul Molitor there.
Right. So we just have to be more patient.
Yes, you have to be more patient. You don't have to be more patient. You just have to be patient. But you have to recognize that this isn't, it hasn't been a single rebuild since 1993 that you've been waiting 18 years for, that this just started a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Is that because of the general manager?
Yeah, because the general manager changed and the entire philosophy of the organization changed. And in a year and a half, he's built the minor league system from a bottom five to a top three. And so, you know, and the major league team has improved a great deal as well. So good things are happening. Thank you for the call. Thanks to all of you for the calls. And apologies to those of you to whom we could not get. But we are plumb out of time. We will check the scoreboard. Blue Jays lose at 9-6. The Honda postgame show continues on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays lose at 9-6 to the Kansas City Royals, and for the first time in 10 tries, the Kansas City Royals have won a series here in Toronto. J.P. Arencibia makes Blue Jays history in the bottom of the seventh inning. He goes deep. A two-run homer is his 20th of the season. No Blue Jay catcher in franchise history has ever hit more than 20 home runs in one season. John Buck did it last year to set the club record, and J.P. Arencibia tied it tonight. Edwin Encarnacion goes 2-for-5 with a double and a homer, scores a couple of runs. Jose Bautista 2-for-3 with a couple of walks. Brett Cecil pitching with strep throat and a fever, gives up 5 runs on 9 hits, but battles into the seventh inning. Time for a look at the scoreboard, see what else is going on. But first, I promised I would read you that cryptic tweet we got from Travis Snyder. It came about half an hour ago, 40 minutes ago. He said, "I will not break, I promise you that. I will miss you all and can't say how thankful I am for your support on this journey." And he hashtagged it, "Keep the Faith," which makes one wonder what sort of news he got about his wrist. He had an MRI, and we don't know what the deal was, but boy, does that not sound good. And sounds to me like Travis Snyder is going to miss the rest of this season. We will see, and we'll try to dig up as much info for you as possible. John Farrell having muscle spasms on the left side, left the game in the ninth, pains below the rib cage on his left side. He is okay. According to Don Wakamatsu, everything seems to be fine, and that is phenomenal news. On the scoreboard, Red Sox beat Texas 6-0. Yankees 22-9 over Oakland. Arizona takes down Washington 8-1. Aaron Hill with an RBI single. The Blue Jays welcome the Tampa Bay Rays for the first of four starting tomorrow. Henderson Alvarez against James Shields. We're on at 7 Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball brought to you by Rogers, a proud partner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. Any accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership with the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howarth, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Joseph Chilean, Joel McPhazen, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Rogers Center.